Welcome back to another edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio, the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. The season has begun, so we're back full time. Hopefully every Wednesday morning. I've probably just jinxed that for all of you, at least in America. As always, I am your host, Skipjack, and I am joined by our illustrious panel. Let me start with our sidekick emeritus. We have Ben Daniel Peters. Ben, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. You know, I just had my first start in the Premier League, and it went okay.
That is good to hear. Next up, we have our salty veteran. It is Brian Ashlock Peters. Brian, how are you doing today?
You know, could be worse, could be better. Spurs won. We had to play Moses Sissoko. So, you know, bit of good, bit of bad.
Man, this is just going to be a high-energy podcast. I can feel it right now. Well, let's jump in. We are here today to talk about a 2-0 win for Spurs at St. Mary's against Newcastle United.
Not St. James.
St.
James either. It is now Sports Direct Park.
No, they changed it back. It's like...
Is it Sports Direct at St. James Park still, or did they get rid of that?
I know that, like,
there's definitely still a bunch of Sports Direct signs, but I don't, maybe that's just because Sports Direct and Mike Ashley.
No, they sold it to, like,
have
Wanda. They sold it to,
Blob.
I love that everyone's hearing this because I can't speak correctly, but, I think, like, Wanga or someone bought the rights to the park, and then they, like, as a PR move, they changed it back to St. James.
Who knows? Who cares?
Who cares?
Newcastle's trip.
We played Newcastle at Mike Ashley's TV dinner tray, and we won 2-0 off a goal from Dele Alli and noted Spurs attacker Ben Davies. Ben, I think the story of this match is Kyle Walker-Peters, who not only earned a Man of the Match trophy at the end of the game, but also was the subject of, whose name became the subject of jokes for pretty much everyone on Spurs Twitter. But I think we were all a little concerned with him going into this match, but how do you think he acquitted himself?
I thought he was fine. You know, I think we were concerned with him because who knows if he's ready for prime time. He was a standout youth player for years, a guy who's been on, you know, Spurs fans' radars for a while. He's trained around the squad for a couple of years now. But I think, at least for me, and I think a lot of people, you know, we had pretty high hopes that someone would be better than Kieran Trippier. And I think Kyle Walker-Peters delivered. I know it was only one game, and I know it was Newcastle. But Kieran Trippier's sole resume is good games against Hull and Watford. So, you know, Kyle Walker-Peters looking good against Newcastle is basically in the same boat. You know, at the very least, I feel comfortable that if we don't sign a right back, which we fucking absolutely should, that we at least have two right backs who can embarrass themselves at an equal level in the Premier League, which what more can you ask for?
Not much, apparently. We have been linked to some right backs this week, but we'll talk about that when we get to our transfer news. I mean, Brian, were you? I know I was very concerned just in terms of having seen Walker-Peters on the American tour. I was, at least at the Roma game, I was very unimpressed. I did not think he acquitted himself well. And that was a game where Roma was definitely just sort of pointing all their attacks at him. Now, Roma is clearly a better team than Newcastle, but also that is a preseason game. I mean, I thought Newcastle targeted Walker-Peters in this game as well, but I think he did a much better job with it. There were some mistakes, but he made a nice save at one point. I mean, his attacking was a lot better than I would expected. I think we're grading him on a curve here, but I don't think that should change the fact that we're impressed. I mean, are you okay with Walker-Peters moving forward?
No. I mean, look, I mean, the thing is we play Chelsea this weekend. And so the question is, am I okay with Kyle Walker-Peters starting against Chelsea, even a Chelsea that doesn't have Pedro and Eden Hazard? And the answer is still pretty much no. I mean, he was fine. He did okay against Newcastle. He pretty much almost gave away a penalty but got bailed out by an offside. He got caught up field quite a few times and got saved by the fact that Moussa Dembele was doing amazing Moussa Dembele things and running everywhere in midfield, and Toby Alderweireld is very good. So against good teams that have quality attacking midfielders and good strikers, he's going to get punished. And, you know, Christian Atsu for Newcastle is fine. He's a decent attacking midfielder. He's quick. I thought he kind of, he had a couple take-ons with Walker Peters, and I seem to recall him dribbling Walker Peters at least once. You know, and, but, yeah, I mean, if you ask me if I was, you know, if I'd prefer Walker Peters to Trippier, or Trippier, I'd still probably, damn you, Greg, I'd still probably prefer Trippier just on the basis that I know that Trippier is at least Premier League quality on a consistent basis. But it was nice to see that Kyle Walker Peters is, in theory, close. He's certainly a lot closer than I thought he was, like you said, after the Roma match and some of the other preseason matches.
If
why do you think Kieran Trippier is Premier League quality in any capacity, let alone the
consistent? Well, I mean, look,
he's just played in the Premier League. A lot of bad players have played in the Premier League.
Yeah, sure. I think if you look at the breadth of Kieran Trippier's experience in the Premier League.
So he's English, and Greg. I think this is important to note.
If you look at Trippier's experience in the Premier League, I think that at the very least he has shown that he is a competent fullback in the Premier League. I don't know if he is, you know, a top six level competent fullback, and he's certainly, you know, or a top, you know, two or three competent level competent fullback. But, you know, I think if this were the Spurs of a few years ago and, you know, we were still, you know, the fifth or sixth best team in the country, I'd be marginally okay with Kieran Trippier. Like, Trippier's not Alan Hutton, and he's not Pascal Chimbonda. I think he's a much more skilled right back than some of the others.
Chimbonda is much better than Kieran Trippier. I'll fight you for that.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
I mean, I think the thing with Trippier is we have seen him have good Premier League games. Now, I can count those games on one hand. But
I think there's even less.
But until this weekend, we didn't even know if Kyle Walker-Peters could have an okay game, let alone a bad one. And it's just, I guess there's just something with, you know, you read youth scouting reports, you see all this stuff, and how that stuff doesn't always pan out. And it's nice to, you know, now we have evidence that Kyle Walker-Peters, like, we've seen him against the Premier League team, and it was at least all right, if not good. And that just gives you a little bit of a foundation, but I understand the idea, at least for now, that, you know, you're more comfortable with a guy like Trippier because he has done it for a while at least, and if you could maybe convince yourself he hasn't gotten totally embarrassed. I mean,
the thing is like, we're trying to compete for, you know, top two or top four or whatever,
a title. That's not out of the
realm. Yeah, whatever you think our goals are, I am less comfortable rolling with a 17, 18, whatever, 18 or 19 year old fullback and letting him learn on the job than I am with someone who I know can at least give me, you know, a 6 out of 10 performance most matches.
I mean, I think you hit an important point there, Brian, where it's, I would be inclined, like, I have more confidence right now in letting him learn on the job than I did before this match, where I'd be interested to see what he can turn into. But like you said, our ambitions aren't what they were 4, 5, 6 years ago. I don't know, like, I would love to give him backup matches. And frankly, there's a world in which if we went out and got a good first team, you know, right back, I might be okay with, you know, letting Walker Peters be his understudy if we just really wanted to take a punt on this kid and we really believed in him. But it's just for our ambitions, I mean, I just think his minutes have to be semi-minimal this year. I hope he can rise to the occasion, but we can't count on it.
I disagree strongly with both of you. I think you're absolutely right that if our two right backs this season are Kieran Trippier and Kyle Walker Peters, we're probably in a lot of trouble. Unless Kieran, Kyle Walker-Peters.
Kieran Walker-PPA.
Why are we having so much trouble with this? If KWP, like, makes a huge leap, then we're fine, obviously. But, you know, odds are he's not going to.
He could make a huge leap and we wouldn't be fine. I mean, if our ambitions are competing for a title and winning a trophy.
Whatever, you know what I'm trying to say. It's like, if he proves to be, like, oh, all of a sudden, like, Harry Kane level right back out of our youth team, you know, great. But the reality is, you know, that's probably not going to happen. And the two of them are not the quality that we need to feel confident going into a season. And so we absolutely need to sign another right back. I think that is no question. But I think between Kieran Trippier and Kyle Walker-Peters, as the current debate seems to be, Kieran Trippier is fucking trash. Like, he is just not a good fullback. He doesn't do anything that a fullback needs to do well. He doesn't defend well. He doesn't move the ball forward well. All he does well is cross. And, like, that's fine and that's helpful. But against Chelsea, a fullback that can cross the ball to Harry Kane or Dele Alli a couple times a match is not the primary need for a fullback. And we've seen Kieran Trippier try to play defense, and it's not fucking pretty. You know, I just keep going back to that Man United match when Anthony Martial, who, you know, doesn't even get into the Man United team anymore, just absolutely, like, ripped the soul from his body as he dribbled through him. And starting Kieran Trippier to do the same thing against Chelsea gives me zero confidence. So with Kyle Walker-Peters, it may be imaginary upside, but at least there is an idea of upside that may exist and he may surprise us. With Kieran Trippier, we know exactly what he's going to give us, and it's not going to be good. Well, I will fight for this.
But you're right about this, Ben, in that Walker-Peters, like, right now, I would argue Walker-Peters is probably a worse player than Kieran Trippier, but we know what Kieran Trippier is. Like, this is what he is. Now, maybe he could become a little more tactically astute with a year of playing in Pochettino's system as the starter. Like, but essentially, we know roughly what he is right now. And we don't know where Walker-Peters could easily surpass that within a year. I mean, and if it's not within a year, he could probably do it in a couple years. And I think that's what's exciting about him. And, you know, I think Spurs fans have gotten a little carried away, which is understandable. It's cool to see a kid from your youth team succeed. And frankly, it's pretty cool to watch a guy like him put in a performance like that when, you know, I think just the expectations were so low. But
right. If you remember correctly, Ryan Mason had a good debut too. So I totally get where you're coming from.
Walker-Peters had a much more, like, yeah, there were problems, but that is a, like, there is much more reason for optimism and the idea that he can improve upon and repeat this performance, you know, than we ever saw out of Ryan Mason. But yeah, I get what you're saying. There's potential there, but it's Newcastle. It's one game. Like, it'd be great if he can put another performance in against Chelsea. And frankly, I'll sit up and take a little more notice if he can put as good a performance against Chelsea. Even if it's without Eden Hazard or Diego Costa or Pedro. But, you know, this is not something, you know, Spurs shouldn't... With the fact is, we might be close to losing a lot of our really good players. We shouldn't be taking chances with our lineup on, a 19-year-old kid out of our academy who's played precisely one Premier League match.
Yeah, it's definitely a high-risk move. But, I mean the reality is we don't have another option. So, fucking, let's hope for the best.
Let's
talk about players that actually did good in the match as opposed to guys that were just okay now.
Wait, I will say that he actually did good in the match.
Especially, even out of context, I think he did good in the match.
He
in
was
context,
fine.
Like, he
was
much better.
He was fine. He wasn't abjectly awful.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like he defended his side well enough. You're right, he got caught up high a lot, but I mean, a lot of that is because we spent a lot of time in Newcastle's half, and Christian Atsu is fast as shit, and so, you know, it's hard to recover on a break, even for Kyle Walker.
I mean, we're talking about a totally different, I think we're talking about his performance completely differently if he doesn't get bailed out by that offside call.
Yeah, but I mean, the reality is, it was offside, so.
No, I understand that, but I mean, like,
he was behind on that guy because he started from an offside position. I mean,
I still feel like, and you know, like this is obviously being very harsh on him, but like he still needs to be canny enough. He should be canny enough, even at his age, to know like I can't barrel into this guy and give him an easy, you know, way out on this.
Like, it was a soft penalty, but like, you're right. You know, going shoulder to shoulder with a striker like that's an obvious move for a striker to be cynical about, and you've got to know better. And, you know, it happened pretty early on in the game. You know, I imagine there's a lot of nerves. I maybe sure. wish yeah. a lot onto him, but, you know.
But I was impressed by
when that grew into the game.
When that happened, I was waiting. I was sort of like paying attention to, because I was expecting a lot more moments like that. And they're really, I mean, he didn't play a perfect match, but he really didn't make a ton of those, you know, just like glaring, obvious, got beaten like a drum, you know, sort of moments like we've seen out of other right backs who play for Spurs.
Yeah. And I thought he progressed the ball well. I thought he used the ball well. You know, he had, it was very safe. I mean, he had like a 90%+ pass completion, so he wasn't taking a lot of chances, but, you know, he put in 5 crosses and the ones he did were pretty fine. Like, you know, there was nothing that was gonna wow anybody, but it wasn't like he was like whacking them into the stands or anything stupid. So his delivery was pretty good, and I thought, you know, the way he used the ball was generally smart. The way he played long out of the back, the way he played short in the final third, you know, it was safe but smart. And I appreciated that for a kid on his debut.
Go ahead.
His ball to Christian Eriksen set up Eriksen's sombrero, which was, you know, one of the best things I've seen anyone do on Spurs in a while. So, when he flipped over the defender's head and ran on.
I mean, after that game, and I don't want to read too much into this game, which I absolutely am, but, you know, if you told me he was going to be Spurs starter in 2 years, I'd be like, all right, like, I could see that. Like, that's not a crazy thing you just told me. I could see that player developing in such a way where he is our starter in 2 years. Now, again, one game, there's a lot to go. You know, he's going to learn, he's going to get better, and teams are going to learn how to target him better. So let's see how this weekend goes, which I suspect, even if it goes poorly, we shouldn't, like, be too harsh on this kid because it's going to be Chelsea. And, you know, I remember watching Kyle Walker get his, you know, ass handed to him by Chelsea. Now, admittedly, that was by Eden Hazard, but still, I mean, this weekend ought to be instructive. Hopefully in a good way, but.
As long as he doesn't shove anyone into the stands, you know, he's still doing better than Kyle Walker did a couple years ago.
True. So let's talk about some other players. I want to talk about Ben's favorite member of Tottenham Hotspur. That's Dele Alli, who had a very interesting day at the office. The best form of revenge. He got Jonjo Shelvey sent off and then scored a pretty spectacular goal a few minutes later. Brian, was it an impressive performance, or did you just have 2 really good moments there?
Before the goal, I distinctly remember thinking, man, Dele Alli has not looked good today. I didn't think that he was involved much in the play. He looked kind of off the pace for most of the match. If you asked me to recall something that he did in the first 45 minutes, I'm not sure I could think of a single thing. But, you know, I mean, he does what Dele Alli does. He popped up and he got somebody sent off because he's an asshole, and they scored a goal. I think the only thing actually that I remember from him in the first half was him being an asshole when he went and had like his little tete-a-tete with Jamal Lascelles, and I can't recall him, you know, making an incisive pass or getting off a good shot or getting into an attacking position until he did.
I feel like we have this conversation about Dele Alli like multiple times a year, and I don't think it's necessarily a huge criticism of his style of play. I think it's something to be said that even when he's not having a great game, he can, you know, when the ball comes across and he needs to hit it just so at a weird angle, he's able to pull it off when he realizes Jonjo Shelvey's a fucking idiot and he can get this guy sent off. You know, he takes advantage of it. I mean,
I don't think Dele, even when Dele's bad, is like a passenger in the same way that, like, you know, Van de Vaart was.
Yes,
when
bad by Dele standards. Bad by Dele standards.
So, you know, like, him and Van de Vaart are, you know, it's a reasonable comparison because they play essentially the same position. But, I mean, Dele is always very busy on the pitch.
He's important in the press. You know, he wins the ball back high up the pitch and he gets it to Eriksen or Kane to do things with. But like in this match, it looked for the longest period of time like he just wasn't at the races. Like his passing wasn't that crisp. He wasn't getting into the right positions. So it wasn't like he was a passenger on the team. He was just not in the kind of form that we expect from him.
Well, it's funny because I remember.
I think Dele Alli.
Go ahead, Ben.
Oh, this is shitty, but I think Dele Alli definitely has a bit of the Nasser Chadleys about him, in that, you know, he can be a little invisible because he is mostly trying to get on the end of passes and make good runs off the ball. I think, you know, his primary skill set is very much like a striker, like Harry Kane, where he's making really good off the ball runs and he finishes pretty well. You know, I think every time I see him, I'm amazed that his origin story is as a central midfielder, because I just have never seen him do the kind of on the ball work that would justify anyone playing that position. You know, his real skill is what he does off the ball and how he gets into position to score. And I think Van der Vaart is a good comparison, you know, minus the whole work rate thing, because he's obviously a much busier player. But, you know, he's this nominally kind of creative pseudo 10 whose bread and butter is really finishing off moves. And I think Alli has a lot of creativity to him. We've seen him play, you know, some really clever through balls, some balls over the top, things like that. And you know, it's in his tool belt. But for the most part, you know, I think if a game's not going super well, like this game honestly wasn't before the red card, you know, he can be kind of a passenger. He and Harry both had like among the lowest touches, if not the lowest of anyone on the pitch, for Spurs. And, you know, part of that is just we were having trouble finding our front two. But the other part is like for a guy who isn't actually playing as a striker and, you know, is supposed to be more than that, I personally would like to see more involvement from Dele Alli. You know, like you see Christian Eriksen dropping all the way back to the center backs if he needs to get on the ball. And, you know, I just wish Dele would give himself a little more involvement on the ball when things aren't going well. You know, I just think, you know, we get a little lost without that.
I mean, this is something Dele Alli's done before, you're right. But at the same time, like, I thought a lot of this team just looked a little bit off the pace. Like, you know, I don't know if it's rust or first game, whatever's, or they're just struggling to deal without our starting fullbacks. But, you know, it's the team did not look sharp overall. I mean, you could see glimpses of genius. Both of our goals were real nice pieces of play. They created a couple other really decent shots. But, you know, generally speaking, it just all wasn't it wasn't bad per se, but it just wasn't all quite connecting.
Yeah, I thought Newcastle generally defended us pretty well in the first half. You know, before the red card, they seemed set up okay. We seemed to be moving very slowly. We had trouble building through the middle, and especially in the first half. You know, Kyle Walker-Peters was a little tentative going forward. Ben Davis is always kind of tentative going forward. That's kind of his thing. Until we kind of camp out in the final third, and then, you know, he does things like apparently score goals now. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, not having the fullback stretching the pitch certainly hurts our ability to attack, but I think you're right when you say they all looked still a little bit like they're on summer vacation, in a way that wasn't super encouraging. But I'm willing to give them a pass. It was the first game of the season, and having seen, you know, Liverpool, Arsenal, and Chelsea have their first day of the season, you know, all things considered, it worked out pretty okay.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, for all of our struggles, Newcastle wasn't, you know, real, other than that offsides, I mean, they weren't creating great scoring opportunities.
Oh, so. Yeah, they didn't threaten us at all. And that, I mean, that's good, you know, to see that we definitely controlled the game, but it's one of those, you know, you don't want to be in a position where you're talking about, like, Brendan Rodgers-esque, you know, we won the possession game. Well, that's enough. We were a little sluggish in the final third. And I worry that were it not for Dele Alli being an absolute master of shitheadery, you know, what that game would have been if it had finished 11-11.
I don't know. It felt like, I mean, obviously things accelerated when Shelvey went off, but I mean, it felt like things were starting to tip against Newcastle at that point in the game. Like, I mean, we did look a little bit sharper in the second half. I don't think it's right to say that we really clicked, you know, as soon as Shelvey went off, but it got better, obviously. But I think we came out of the half looking a little more lively. And as soon as Son came on, I think that helped too. You know, getting Sissoko's ass off.
As it turns out, Moussa Sissoko is fucking terrible.
Who knew? This isn't even like a top. This isn't even like a top five like bad Moussa Sissoko performance either. He was just a. I mean, total passenger.
Yeah, he is a black hole of suck. And that's the other thing is, you know, when Kane and Ali are both staying high, waiting to get on the end of things, and then Moussa Sissoko is doing absolutely nothing. You know, you're asking a lot of Dembele and Dier and Eriksen and your fullbacks to like make anything happen because you're playing a man down with two guys who want to be receiving balls, and yeah, it's just a fucking bad system. Moussa Sissoko should never play again. Can we all agree on that?
So, Brian, coming out of this game, looking towards next week, we're playing Chelsea a lot earlier than I think a lot of us would like to be playing Chelsea. On the other hand, Chelsea are missing two of their best players.
Can I back up?
You want to back up? You don't want to move on to Chelsea up end? What would you like? Who do you want to call fraud?
No, I just, thinking of Chelsea made me think of red cards, and that reminded me of the Harry Kane challenge.
I guess we should talk about Harry Kane trying to murder people.
We did injure two of Newcastle's players pretty quickly in that game, which obviously, you know, helped. Harry Kane's challenge, red card or no? What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's a red. I mean, he scissor kicked a guy. I don't think Kane was trying to injure him, but that is what you would call reckless. I mean, the way he brought that second leg around, it's just not, you know, think about if like Diego Costa had done that to like, you know, Danny Rose.
Yeah, Moussa Dembélé would have gouged his eye out.
Yeah, definitely. And how does that work out for us?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to acknowledge that point, which was a very big moment in the game that could have gone against us in a very bad way.
Definitely. Okay. Imagine if we were going in next week without, you know, imagine if we had to play Thick Vin, and we didn't have to play Harry Kane. I mean, that would not be fun going into Chelsea. So that's a great segue, and we're going to pretend I haven't already segued. Brian, what do you think of this team going in to play Chelsea? It's a little earlier than we would like to see them, but, you know, they don't have Pedro, they don't have Hazard, they don't have Cahill, they don't have Cesc. You know, we're going in with Kyle Walker-Peters, which is concerning, but, you know, it's also, neither team looked like they were really clicking on all cylinders, Chelsea in particular, in the first week of the year. So, I don't know, how are you feeling going to play Chelsea, our first home match at Wembley? Brian, you there? Did you mute your mic?
Well, it sounds like Brian abandoned us.
No.
Here we go.
Which also means, weirdly, I had takes about Harry Kane that you guys didn't get to hear because I was muted as well.
Oh, so.
That'll
be on our Patreon show.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. If you subscribe to Acast Plus. let's see. Chelsea, yeah, this is the time to play Chelsea. No Pedro, no Eden Hazard. The striker situation is still weird because it seems like Conte is rolling with Batshuayi as the starter and then bringing Morata on later in the games. No Cesc, no Gary Cahill. I feel like there's somebody else I'm missing that's also out. Bakayoko is still hurt. Yeah. So that means their midfield is basically Conte and I don't know, Lewis Baker maybe? I really don't know who plays in midfield for them. So if I'm going to play Chelsea, now's the time I want to do it. They didn't look good in their opening match against Burnley. I mean, they lost at Stamford Bridge to Burnley, which is troubling in and of itself. And,
they still almost held them in Burnley, and got them in. Burnley sucks.
Burnley, by the way, did not win more than one. They won one home game or one away game all last year.
They took 7 points away from home last year, I think is the number. So
to beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, which is normally like a team that wins every home game, you know, for years at a stretch, is fucking hilarious.
Yeah. So I mean, look, if we're going to play at Wembley, I mean, we just played against Juventus at Wembley. We looked pretty good in that game. You know, we looked Spurs-like against Newcastle. So, I think it's a great time to be playing Chelsea, and, I definitely don't buy into this is too soon to see them in the season. I think the way everything has played out now is the perfect time versus seeing them in like mid-October once everybody's back and they've had time to kind of click into Conte's system.
Yeah, I think the reality is even though we haven't had any signings, you know, Chelsea don't have really any meaningful signings at this moment. And given their suspensions and injuries, it's us playing our team from last year against Chelsea playing a worse version of their team from last year.
Except we're also running out a 19-year-old, like, right back who,
nah,
you know, has won Premier League game. And that just, even without Hazard, even without Pedro.
Who is going to be starting for England in the World Cup next year.
I mean, clearly. But that will be due to a clerical error, not because he earned it. But, you know, I feel like that we are helped by not all those guys being out, and that'll specifically some of those guys who would target Walker Peters, but boy, they still have a lot of really good players. And I don't know, maybe Trippier, I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday night, maybe Trippier will be fit for that game. I don't know if that's an improvement or not, but
I hope not.
Yeah. I don't think he will if he's still a health risk, but anyway, it would just be, I guess there's no ideal time to play Chelsea, so we'll just hope we can make the most of this.
I like our chances, honestly. Like, I think Chelsea's in for a rude awakening this season, and this may be premature, but of all the top six teams, I think Alvaro Morata looked very good in his sub performance, but
mentally, otherwise, not worried about him.
Otherwise, yeah, well, I think, you know, everyone else seems to have improved in ways that Chelsea really hasn't. You know, they replaced Nemanja Matić with Bakayoko, which might be a net positive over the course of the season, but it still, you know, leaves them without Nemanja Matić, who they sure could use going into this game, and with a guy who, you know, is going to take some time to come up to speed in the Premier League. Plus they have, you know, the addition of Champions League football that they didn't have last year. I think if you're looking at teams who are likely to finish outside the top six, for me, I think Chelsea is definitely my first choice to finish outside the top four.
More so than Arsenal?
Yeah, I think with Arsenal, it depends a lot on what happens with Alexis Sanchez. If they end up keeping him, then they're probably fine. But, you know, again, they still have to compete with, I guess, Liverpool, and maybe us. I don't know. It's hard to figure out what the top four looks like, but I mean, for me, it's Man City, Man U, and us, and then the other three teams are fighting for that last spot. Maybe that's naive, I don't know, but Chelsea, at the very least, is going to have a harder time this season than they did last year. So I'm less worried about this game this season than I would have been 6 months ago.
Is Chelsea even linked with, or who, are they linked with any big players? Like, still, I feel like they've lost out on other major
Danny
targets.
Rose.
Oh, God. We'll get to that in a minute. Is that it?
I don't really follow Chelsea transfer rumors. So they're not linked with anybody that we're after, so that's a good sign.
That's a nice change of pace for once. So let's talk about transfer rumors. And let's start with Daniel Rose. After our last podcast, before the first game of the season, Danny Rose did an interview with The Sun and talked about a lot of stuff. In short, he basically said he's not paid what he's worth. He wants to get paid what he's worth. He knows he has one contract left. And basically complained that Spurs don't sign players that you don't have to Google often enough. Now, in my personal view, I don't think he said anything that was wrong, but I think the way in which he did it and the timing in which he did it, like, there's pretty much no way to defend that. He knew what he was doing. This is not the rudest way you can ask for a move, but it's certainly trying to rock the ship immediately before the season starts. That's not good. He knows what he's doing. I don't know. A lot of Spurs Twitter started calling that guy a snake. I don't necessarily think he should be super loyal to us because we all treated him like shit for like a solid 4 years there. But I kind of, I don't know. I wish he hadn't done this. I feel like he'd probably be in line for a raise pretty soon. But I don't know. I mean, seize the means of production. Brian, do you think this is too far gone for Spurs to salvage? Also, on top of all that other stuff, Danny Rose is apparently Chelsea. It came out in the Sun today that Chelsea is going to lodge a bid for Rose after the game this week. I don't think there's any way in hell we ever sell anyone to Chelsea who we don't want to go to Chelsea. So I doubt that'll happen. But what do you think of the Danny Rose transfer saga? Do you think he's going? Do you think this could be salvaged? I mean, he's not going to be healthy for several weeks, so I don't even know if he's going to be, like, you know, if we're going to notice if he gets exiled from the squad because it's going to be so long before he's playing for us. I mean, what do you think's going on with Rose?
I think there's not a lot to be worried about because, like you said, it didn't seem like the things he was saying were things that were like, sell me now, I want out. It sounded like stuff that meant more, hey, maybe sign some players, people that I don't have to Google, which is dumb in and of itself, but you know, I don't have any sort of belief that Rose is going anywhere. I agree, I don't think he's going to Chelsea. You know, I don't know what the market is for him outside of teams in England, so I don't know who's buying him or where he'd go otherwise. I think the injury also helps us. I think with him being out at least for the next 2 or 3 weeks, that makes it much less likely that he moves. So I don't know. I think he'll be a Spurs player by the end of the window. So,
do you see him getting his playing time curtailed?
No, I mean, what's the other option? Play Ben Davies?
Yes. I mean, yes.
You know, I mean, Spurs rotate their fullbacks pretty consistently anyway. So, you know, for the first half of the season, we were going to see, you know, Davies midweek, Rose on the weekend. And that was just, that's just how it's going to be. I mean, I think, you know, like you said, I don't think we'll see it curtailed in any noticeable way just because of the way Pochettino uses his fullbacks. And the only way we would ever even notice is if in, you know, December or something like that, when the games start coming, you know, one right on top of the other, and then he plays a little less, then maybe we'd start to notice it. But I don't think there's going to be any repercussions.
Ben, are you mad about this? Share your feels with us.
I am mad that it happened. I think, you know, it was poor timing and done in poor taste. But, you know, as you've said, he didn't actually say anything really wrong, or at least really untruthful about the situation. And, you know, I feel like he expressed a lot of concerns that Spurs fans have. you know, we don't pay players very well. We've signed a lot of weird guys over the years, and you know, the reality is we can't compete with the best clubs in the world in terms of transfer fees and in terms of wages. So we need to be doing things a little bit different. We need to give players a reason to want to stay at Spurs, or they'll want to leave because that paycheck is very attractive that Chelsea or Man City is going to offer. And I think saying we need signing is not unreasonable. You know, if you want to stay at Spurs because you like the Spurs project, you need to believe that that project is going somewhere and that we're continually investing in this team and making sure that it's as good as it can be. And when you don't see that, I think it's reasonable to call into question, you know, well, why am I staying here if I don't think that's happening? Why not get paid? You know, if I can't, you know, for me personally, it's like I would take job satisfaction and, you know, some work-life balance maybe over a raise, but if it's a choice between you know, the same work environment either way, plus money, I'm going to take the money. You know, I know it's different than football players, but, you know, I think if we're not showing our best players that we want to give them a platform to succeed, I think it's entirely reasonable that they look around and see what else is out there. And, you know, again, I think the Sun interview was in very poor taste and incredibly bad timing and a dumbass thing to do. But given the way our summers looked so far, I have a hard time, you know, condemning Danny Rose for doing it, because I think we're all a little frustrated with how we've conducted ourselves. You know, we don't look like we are addressing the fact that we aren't going to be able to sign, you know, Killian Mbop or whatever his name is. You know, we have to do better. We have to look for those angles. We have to sign players that we can sign. And it looks like now that we're just doing nothing.
And it looked like then. It looked like then. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
You know, I don't know. I'm sort of rambling here because I feel like I'm mad at him, but I also understand him. And, you know, the reality is we don't pay players that good. You know, rumors are that Everton's new signings are all making over $100,000 a week. Nobody at Spurs make more than $100,000 a week. Why is Everton paying players better than we are?
I think Kane does, but that's, like, it. So
yeah.
Maybe Lloris.
Well, it's just because Everton doesn't care about their wage structure or sustainability. Or, you know.
I mean, there are reasons Spurs right. aren't, like, paying those guys. Now, I mean, the problem is...
There are
is,
reasons. I yeah. mean, certainly. I mean,
team-centric reasons. That's not to say the players can't and shouldn't make more money elsewhere. I'm just saying, like... I don't know what Everton, like, unless Everton's new owner just has crazy money, which I don't think he does.
I mean, he might, but yes. The reality is if we aren't willing or able to keep up with that, we're going to struggle. Maybe not next year, but in years to come, because players are going to go where they're going to make money. Like, that's just it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, on the other hand, West Ham pay their players a hell of a lot of money, and look how garbage they are, so...
Yeah, I'm not saying it's going to make them a better team, but, you know, I think eventually the money tells. You know, over time, I think that's a pretty determinative factor in team quality. So, you know, I think there are reasons to sit up and take notice of what Danny Rose had to say. That said, I hope he doesn't go. I hope he plays a lot of minutes for us, and I hope, you know, when he does get fit, we welcome him back into the fold, because... He is the best fullback of this team right now.
Yeah, and Rose is due to return to training next week, I think. So hopefully we do that. And frankly, hopefully we can work out like a better paying contract for this guy, and he can, you know, get that big payday he wants at Spurs, because Danny Rose is a really good left back, and I wish he could stay a little healthier, but, you know, he's still an excellent fullback, and I would like him to play those prime years of his career at Tottenham, but... you know, who knows? I mean, that's not going to be easy for us. We're going to have to... Hopefully the stadium can solve a lot of these problems in terms of our wage structure and allow us to spend a little bit more on these guys. But it's frustrating to watch. That's why we lost Walker. That's why we might lose a couple of other guys. And that is why we should be buying smartly this summer, because we might not have so long with this core group of players. So... I think the biggest transfer that, or at least the one that looks the most imminent is, I'm going to screw this name up. I apologize, listener. Davinson Sanchez, who is a Colombian center back at Ajax. He is largely regarded as a guy with tons of physical skills, really good technically. Maybe hasn't entirely put the package together on the field yet, but he is getting minutes for Ajax. Ajax don't want to lose this kid. And it's looking like if we get him, it'll be for somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 to 40 million euros. I mean, this was a little bit striking to me in that I was not expecting us to go this hard for this, I don't know, valuable or this expensive a center back. But does this signing make sense to you, Brian?
Yeah. I mean, no, because it's not a right back. But
we'll get to
I
that mean, in a minute.
I mean, yes, because this is
if Spurs had a scouting department, this would be the type of player you would want to go after. I mean, he's 21 years old. He turned 21 back in June. So he spent all of his 20-year-old season starting pretty much every match for Ajax. He started a Europa League final. He's good. I mean, you don't get to play at that level at Ajax and not be at least somewhat good. Center back scouting is weird and difficult, but like you said, he seems to have all the physical attributes that you would want. He seems to be very athletic, which certainly fits into what Pochettino wants his center backs to do, either in a 2 or 3. So, I mean, yeah, I think the price tag is a little bit of sticker shock, and I mean, but what the hell do numbers mean? I mean, you know, 35 million is, what, 15, 18 from a summer or two ago? So, you know, if that's what a 21-year-old center back who, you know, has a lot of European and experience and a team that likes to play football, then okay, great.
Ben, do you think this move is about, I mean, do you think it's about freeing up our midfield, getting Dyer out of that back three more permanently? I mean, or do you think this is just, we're jumping on a young guy that we got a line on?
I think it's more the latter. I don't know that I would expect Sanchez to come in and start immediately. You know, at least maybe through the first half of the season, I wouldn't expect to see a ton of him. But yeah, the reality is, you know, we play often in a back three system, and we have two real center backs in Toby and Jan. We have Eric Dyer, who, you know, we've seen his versatility at center back and in midfield. And then that's really it. You know, Kevin Vimmer seems to be persona non grata at the club. Cameron Carter-Vickers is terrible and does not look ready at all. Who knows if he gets there? He's still young. But, you know, for the time being, we basically have 2.5 center backs and, you know, 1.5 defensive midfielders. So signing a center back, I think, is a paramount. You know, we definitely need cover. We saw last year when Toby went down, we had a lot of trouble. And if we're not going to trust Kevin Vimmer to step into the breach, then we obviously need somebody. And I think, you know, freeing Eric Dyer to play midfield again, you know, is great. I think, you know, Moussa Dembele is not a superly fit player that we can rely on for 38 games plus Champions League and Cups a season. So, you know, I don't love the Wanyama Dyer midfield, but we saw it kind of start working by the end of last season. So getting Eric Dyer the room to move back up there as needed, I think is a big help to us. You know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. You know, our big failure is lack of depth. That's where everything seems to go wrong. When our first choice goes down, you know, we drop points. When everybody's healthy, we tend to win most of our games. And so bringing in a guy who seems like he might be able to slot in and cover for people as needed, you know, is good. I have no idea how good this guy actually is. I don't watch a lot of Ajax games. People seem to like him, so that's encouraging. You know, maybe he can play right back sometimes if we need him. I don't know. But, yeah, I'm happy to pay the money on a prospect like this. Like, this is the kind of signing I would much rather see us going after than a Keane or a Maguire who, you know, have Premier League experience but are still pretty mediocre. You know, this is the kind of guy with a lot of potential upside, that might prove to be a brilliant signing. So, go get him.
I mean, there's nothing I don't like about getting this type of player. I mean, he's young. He is, you know, has all these tools that, are, you know, Pochettino should be able to refine, you know, really sort of hone over the years. He's going to be extra depth. He's going to be, you know, if we lose Toby or someone in a few years, we could train this guy up where he might be ready to step in a more prominent role. I mean, it works from all sides. And I'm like Brian said, the sticker shock sort of you know, it's a little hard to get over, but at the same time, you know, it is what it is. That's the market that we're in today, especially Ajax aren't particularly eager to sell him. And we're swooping in pretty late, so I wouldn't expect a deal, but,
And in a completely irrelevant sense, we've had a lot of luck with Ajax center backs lately, so,
yeah,
you know.
I'm all about our entire Ajax backline strategy, so.
Yeah. Keep fucking that chicken.
Exactly, exactly. One of my favorites. Good sidekick work there, Ben. That's great sidekick work there. I'm gonna go to Ishii right now with some of the, ancillary signings we have. Which one are you most excited about? Brian, Balde, Diop, Barkley, Foyth, or do any of those guys particularly tickle your fancy? We're gonna talk about RE in a minute, so.
Okay, sorry. So I guess of the ones you listed, I think the only one that's really that interesting is, Kite Balde. Or Balde, I don't know, whatever the hell his name is.
Keita
Balde. Yep. I want him to be the other way, like Naby Keita, so I want him to be Balde, Keita, but whatever. I think he's the most interesting. I think in terms of, you know, the skill that he has shown, and in a pretty good league in Serie A, and the fact that we are thin in attacking midfield with the continued absence of Eric Lamella and, you know, the relative, anonymity of all of our youth attacking midfielders. I think Balde makes the most sense and is the most interesting. I would like Felipe Anderson as opposed to him. But I think if you're going to sign a player, out of that group, I would much rather it be Balde versus Ross Barkley.
Ben, any of those guys tickle your fancy, or is it the same?
I guess I'll go through them real quick. Foyth is another guy who is an off-the-radar center back. Maybe he's really good, maybe he's not, I have no idea.
He's a project.
Probably. I mean, I don't know if he's more of a project than Sanchez is, or if we're kind of expecting them to fill the same role. His price tag is certainly better, but obviously he hasn't played at the same kind of higher European level, that Sanchez has. So I don't know what to expect from Foyth. I don't know that anybody really does, but, you know, for £9 million, which is the rumored transfer fee in this market, seems like, I don't know, fuck it, sign him up anyway. Whatever happens, if we get Sanchez, get him too. I don't care. Maybe he'll be good. Diop is a young central midfielder who, I asked Kaylee about him today and his assessment was, whatever. You know, I don't think, you know, the numbers are there that really show him to be like a super hot prospect, but, you know, he hasn't played a ton of minutes. Central midfield is kind of a hard thing for numbers to get anyway. Maybe he's good. I don't know what to think of our scouting department. Whatever. You know, go for it. Again, I know what Ross Barkley is, and I know what his limitations are, and I don't believe that Pochettino can exceed them. So maybe getting a guy like Diop is a better move. Again, his price tag will probably be better, so fucking go for it. Keita Balde is the only guy out of that list who, you know, kind of really makes you sit up and take notice. He scored a lot from a left-wing forward position last year in Serie A. By all accounts, he's good, he's fast, he scores. You know, as Brian said, we definitely need another attacking midfielder, especially given Eric Lamella's situation, and the fact that Sissoko sucks and Nkudu is, I have no idea. Again, talking to Michael, just to give a little stats information, his numbers profile, he said, looks very similar to Eric Lamella's when we bought him from Roma. You know, obviously Eric Lamella never translated that to goals and assists in the way he did in Serie A, but he turned out to be a pretty good player regardless. So, you know, again, I guess even if Balde never hits those same heights in the Premier League, I think he can give us an Eric Lamella-esque level of performance. I'm more than thrilled with that. So, yes, along with Brian, that is my pick.
So let's move on to maybe the most, like, after Sanchez, the most concrete, I don't know about concrete, but certainly most talked about bit of Spurs transfer business. According to reports from L'Equipe, Spurs have apparently agreed to contract terms with Aurier off of PSG, who is a right back, obviously. Just on the pitch-wise, the things that... I mean, he is probably about as good a Kyle Walker replacement as we're going to find on the open market. The problem with him is not how he fits into our team or how he plays. The problem with him is this is a guy with some problems. That is not a good sentence. I apologize. This is a guy with some issues off the pitch. Let's put it that way. He, I think a lesser issue, he got into a fight with some cops at a nightclub, and that has sort of, the warrants out on him has limited his ability to play overseas. He wasn't able to play a game against Arsenal last year because of that, but as far as I'm concerned, the real problem is he used some homophobic slurs last year to describe Zlatan Ibrahimovic and his relationship with their coach, Laurent Blanc. That is pretty unacceptable to me. I'm not saying that you can't come back from that. I mean, there are ways to show contrition and remorse. We have not seen them thus far, and it is, I mean, for me, as far as I'm concerned, it's frankly concerning that we would go get a guy who has said things like that in public, or at all, frankly. I mean, Brian, where do you come down on this? Because you've probably seen more of him play than the rest of us have. But both in terms of his on the pitch fit and then maybe how you feel about in general about Spurs getting a guy like this.
Okay. So just purely on the pitch, I mean, Aurier is exactly what you'd want in a Pochettino system from either a fullback or a right fullback or a right wing back. He can also play a little bit of left back if he needs to. You know, he is fast, he is big, he is strong, you know, he's even decent in the air, his crossing is pretty good, you know, I don't know what his, like, statistical profile looks like, and it's probably a bit skewed anyway because of playing for PSG in Ligue 1, but, yeah, I mean, he's really, really good, and he's not that old. He's, I guess he's 25, 26 at this point. So he's coming into his peak age years, and, you know, you lock him up on a 4 or 5 year deal, and that's great for Spurs. You know, with the off the pitch stuff, I agree with you. I mean, the conviction for assaulting a police officer is worrying, you know, just in footballing terms, because it has already prevented him from playing matches in England. It made him miss out on PSG's trip to Arsenal in the Champions League last year. There's not necessarily even a guarantee that if we did sign him, he would be given a work permit to come into the country. I will say that his assault conviction is being appealed right now, so it's possible that the status of that appeal could change the work permit thing. And like you said, the more concerning issue is some of the language that he has used in reference to his teammates and to his coaches. As far as I know, he made some apologetic noises, but I don't know if there was anything that was particularly contrite about any of those. You know, it's just one of those weird things where you want good people that you can like and support in every sort of way playing for your sports team. And when you don't have those sorts of things, it makes fandom difficult. And you know, on the one hand, Aurier would almost certainly make us a better team on the football pitch. But on the other hand, he seems like kind of an asshole. And not even in an asshole in the kind of way that, like, Dele Alli is an asshole on the pitch, but, like, an asshole in the kind of way where he does not seem like the best human being off the field. And it just makes you feel kind of weird and icky. And I'm not sure I'd like it if we bought him.
I mean, Ben, how do you sort of grapple with, you know, players that play on the team you root for might not be human beings that you want to root for. I mean, I don't think Spurs, I mean, we sort of, Spurs fans sort of make excuses for a guy like Ledley King, who had an incident much earlier in his career, but, you know, we haven't had, I mean, a guy, like a real, like sort of what Liverpool had to deal with Luis Suarez. We haven't had something like that in at least a little bit from what I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, I personally take a much harder line with this than maybe some people, but I don't want him on my team, like, period. Like you said, I think there is a level of contrition he can show. I think people make mistakes. People say shitty things, and they can learn from it and come back from it and emerge as a better person who recognizes that what they did was horrifically bad. But, like Brian said, you know, the apologetic noises we've gotten so far from Serge Aurier do not rise to that level for me to be comfortable with it. You know, we've seen in the Premier League John Terry, Luis Suarez, Jamie Vardy all pull this shit where they've, you know, racially abused somebody, and, you know, we see what it looks like when their fandoms, you know, twist themselves into knots, defending them in spite of everything. You know, yeah, they apologize. They say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. But, you know, we all feel like that's fucking bullshit. And these people are gross, and these fans have an obligation to condemn them, and these teams should not defend those actions and not harbor those kinds of players. And, you know, as a Spurs fan watching this happen, I have felt like, you know, and I think a lot of us have felt, if it were me, I wouldn't tolerate this. I wouldn't accept this. But then tribalism happens and the guy gets on your team and, you know, it's really easy to make excuses and, you know,
He scores a game winner against Arsenal, and you know he didn't say that for right. A while. It's just the heat of the moment. Blah blah blah. You start making excuses.
Right. Oh, you know, Ledley King was really drunk when he said it, and you know, I'm sure he didn't mean it. And you know, I'm sure he feels bad because I like Ledley King a lot, and you know, that's enough for me. And I think we are wrong, frankly, to give Ledley King the pass that we did. You know, I think it happened in a climate where social media and the internet wasn't as much of a thing that put it all in our faces. And so, you know, we had a little plausible deniability about it even happening. Like, you know, I'll be honest, when the Luis Suarez thing happened, and I was sort of gathering my thoughts about it, I was reminded of the Ledley King incident, and it was a thing that really hadn't even stuck with me until I was forced to confront it again. And I think that's fucking a huge problem. And I think as sports fans, you know, we should hold our players to a standard of human decency, that transcends their ability on a football pitch. I think that is a moral obligation, for anybody. You know, there's a lot of gross shit about sports in a lot of contexts, but for me, I find it to be a pretty easy line to draw. And so, you know, now in the wake of Suarez and Terry and Vardy, confronted with the possibility of having a guy like Serge Aurier who, you know, made homophobic slurs against Laurent Blanc and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, my position is no, I don't want you playing for my team. I like my team. I want my team to do well, but if my team is going to be composed of people like this, then you have no place here. I'm just not going to tolerate it. I will boo his every touch. I will never support him. You know, again, maybe he comes out with a statement and some real soul searching and puts in the work to be, you know, anti-homophobic in a way that is convincing. But failing that, I am drawing a line in the sand and say, I do not want this fucking guy near my team, period.
I mean, I don't disagree at all with what Ben said. I think that on balance, that is probably how I feel about this. But it's just an interesting question in like, where's the line? Like, you know, is the line, assaults a bouncer in a nightclub? Is the line racially abuses, you know, a cab driver? Is it says homophobic things about, you know, his manager and another player? Like, it, I understand that people are human and that contrition would be nice, and that in a perfect world, we should always encourage, you know, people not to say, you know, racist or homophobic things. And we would like that of our athletes too. But I think in the hyper masculine world that is sports, things happen. And I just don't know. I am comfortable, very comfortable saying that, like, this is over the line. I just don't know where the line actually begins. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm very comfortable penalizing Warrior for the things that he did, but it just also makes me sit and consider, like, okay, well, you know, what if Eric Dyer was a drunk who had a lot of drunk driving convictions, and, you know, or, you know, whatever. So it's hard. It is hard.
And I think, you know, you look at, like, I joked about it earlier, but, like, Moussa Dembélé literally tried to gouge out Diego Costa's eye. Like, that's fucked up, and that's really bad, and I am willing to give him a pass on that a little bit. You know, it's one of those things.
If he had done that to a bouncer in a nightclub, how would we feel about it?
Right, I would feel worse than outside the context of sport, which is probably bad. I should probably be madder about what Moussa Dembélé did. You know, Dele Alli punched a guy in the stomach on the pitch. That's not something that somebody did in, you know, a public, normal, everyday life thing that, like, he'd kind of get away with scot-free. But I guess for me, it's the difference between, I don't know, maybe I'm just making excuses or talking nonsense, but something like racism and homophobia, to me, transcends the moment. It's not something that you can just walk back and say, I was heated in the moment, like a punch, like a violent action, on the football pitch. You know, it's the kind of thing that is a little more pervasive, and a little more indicative of character. And, you know, I think has broader reaching consequences than just the moment. You know, you punch a guy, that's kind of, yeah, maybe you have aggression and violence issues, but the harm is limited pretty much to the person you punch. Whereas when you're abusing someone for their race, their sexuality, what have you, those inherent characteristics, that's something that doesn't just live in that moment. Like, that lives forever.
I mean, but again,
and it has the capacity to affect people beyond that moment. You know, like, homosexuality in football, in sports in general, is obviously there, and yet it is, because of the nature of the sport, it is very closeted in a very unfortunate way. And, you know, odds are somebody on Tottenham Hotspur is probably gay. Probably more than one person. And how does that person feel when someone with that record comes onto their team? You know? I don't want anyone to have to feel any certain way, you know, about dealing with that. And our fans, you know, we have plenty of gay fans, you know. They should not have to live with the fact that they have to now wrestle with the support of someone who has that record of homophobia, and has demonstrated that characteristic and that quality and that outlook. You know, that to me, I think, is the bigger problem, is that it's pernicious, and, you know, you can't just wipe that away without causing a lot of harm to potentially a lot of people. And so, you know, I'm not okay with it.
And again, I don't disagree with anything you've just said. But my thing is, some players, and you gave the example already, Ledley King, some people, players have gotten a pass for some of these things, and whether it was social circumstances at the time or just the era that we were living in, you know, I think it's fair to say that Ledley King has essentially gotten a pass on that behavior. And so Aurier doesn't get a pass because he did his on Periscope live on the internet for millions or hundreds of thousands of people to see, and you know, he has to pay for that for the rest of his career. I guess I'm mostly fine with that being the consequence, but I'm also, it's just also concerning because I don't like having two sets of rules for what is essentially the same thing.
And I think you're right, but I think if we're going to err on the side of a broad rule, then I would say err on the side of we need to be more, condemnatory, is that a word? I don't know. Having a problem with what Ledley King did rather than having more of a pass for people to do similar things.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably, that is probably the right approach to do it. But, I mean, it, yeah. Yeah. So, don't sign Sergio Aurier.
Yeah, it's not a good move, guys. It's a very bad move. But, I don't know. There's no easy answers. I know that's a Pat sort of wind up here, but it's just, you know.
Let me
rephrase that. It's not that there are no easy
answers.
There's
a lot of answers about a lot of things in sport, and, you know, if we're drawing a line here, how do we engage with the other stuff? I think that's where you get into maybe some of the harder questions and more blurry lines, but this, to me, is a pretty clear line.
No,
and not
you're absolutely right. It's just, the issue, as far as I see it, is how do we engage with these athletes, and how do we hold them, like you guys were saying, to, like, what standard is it appropriate to hold them to? And obviously, don't be a homophobe, don't be a racist, is like a fairly, like, I mean, that's a bar so low you should be able to crawl over it. I mean,
you know, let's talk to the president of our country and we'll
see
how
it's
going.
Yeah, you're right. And by demanding these standards, you know, it's only going to, like you said, I mean, how do we expect, you know, foreign players in the squad to feel if we're letting racist players play? Like, if you have a guy like John Terry in your squad, how do you expect, like, a gay player to feel, a gay person to be comfortable either as a member of the team or as a member of the fan base? But it's just, you know, it's difficult to, I don't know, like, I don't need angels on my team, but I also feel like those are fairly low bars to ask people to clear, so.
Yeah. And the thing is, Aurier is going to go somewhere. I mean, PSG do not need him. They have Meunier, they have Dani Alves. He's going to go somewhere. He's going to go to some big club that needs a good right back. He'll wind up at, like, Chelsea or United or, you know, Barcelona, or he'll wind up somewhere. And he'll be really good for them for 4 or 5 years. And we'll look back on this in 4 or 5 years and we'll be like, man, we could have signed him. But
unless he says more shit like this.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, the thing is still going to be, yeah, but he still did that shitty thing and he still never showed really any real contrition and he's probably still an asshole. So, you know, I mean, Aurier's going to get his move, so I guess good for him.
So the reason he hasn't gone to a bigger club is like 100% his legal issues as opposed to his comments, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
And honestly,
I almost, you know what?
Punch cops. I don't care.
yeah, it's interesting that we didn't discuss his assault at all.
So, from what I understand about the assault is there was racial profiling involved. He was getting hassled, for no good reason, and a tussle happened.
But even if it wasn't that, even if he was just an asshole who got too drunk and got pissed off, it's like you were saying earlier, Ben, like, I'm a lot more willing to forgive, like, you got drunk and, like, had a little moment of, you know, you punch a guy in the face or whatever, and obviously it depends if you, like, cripple a guy or something, that's different, but, you know, if there's, like, a moment of, you know, you lost your head and did something like that, that's one thing, because, like you said, it's sort of contained within the moment. But even if you just get drunk and lose your head, like, I think probably we would all guess Ledley King did, you know, there's something pernicious about just getting that mindset, that view out there, and associating it with a team that people follow and love and all that. There's a difference. I think there's a difference between, you know, just like having a dumb moment and punching a guy in the face and having a dumb moment and saying stuff like that, even if legally speaking, it's completely the other way around.
Right. And also the reality is, you know, cops are tools of a capitalist oppressive state and they're bad. That's a socialist Hotspur Ben Daniels for you guys. So feel free to unfollow.
Now that Adam Smith has left our team, you're free to express your true opinions about the economic systems that hold us in place.
That's right.
On that note, I think we're going to wrap it up. We've run a little over, and I think after the discussion we just had, I'd feel a little weird working in our bits. But we will make sure to do Q&A next time. This time it was not your fault, listeners. It was ours. So, Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Gary Rupier, where I tweet things about soccer and hating Kieran Trippier and socialism.
Okie dokie. Brian, where can people find you on the inner tubes?
You can find me at Brian with a Y, THFC.
I don't really tweet about socialism at all. But if you tweet cat pictures, I will totally retweet those.
It's like socialism, right, Ben?
Basically.
Yeah.
And you can find me
I think cats are dangerous libertarians, I think, if we're being honest. But
I think cats are probably, you know, like paleo conservatives, if we're really being honest with ourselves. But that again, you can find on our Patreon podcast. And finally, I can be found on Twitter at skipjack0079, where I have only the best takes on Tottenham and the hot professional wrestling takes that you crave and need in your life. So on that note, for Ben and for Brian, I am Skipjack. Come on, you Spurs.